This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can, you know, always, you know, text us. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. The Bucks won the NBA Cup last night.
Yeah, man. Did you see the entire game?
No, I watched some of the first half, and they were looking pretty good, though.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was nice, but, you know, it's kind of, you don't think about it as they got 55 more games to play, and I think nobody will remember that they won this later on in the year. The real prize is the NBA championship. We kind of saw the Lakers win it last year. And then at the end of the year, the Lakers were, you know, cannon fodder. So I got to keep it in perspective. But it was fun, interesting game. But it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for the co-founder of the Campaign for Lead-Free Water, Dr. Yana Lambrini-Du, Paul Schwartz, who is also a co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and none other than Robert Miranda, Flat. Good morning to you all. How you guys doing?
Good morning, Earl. Good to be here.
Great to be up on this beautiful winter day.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you guys, there are a lot of people listening to us on this subject, and there's really a lot of interest in it, and we haven't even begun to scratch the surface on the information that's going to be forthcoming with the information, critical information that you guys continue to bring to the table. And so I just wanted to say I was at an event on this past Saturday, and they were testing children for lead at a homeless shelter. And there were nurses there. And then there's another woman who's analyzing all of that, and they're on top of at least attempting to address the issues. I don't know exactly where they go with the information, but they're certainly doing a good job of compiling the information. A few years ago, this would not have even been happening, but it is happening. So that shows that we're starting to reach some people. Robert, you wanted to talk a little bit this morning about what is an ongoing expose, I guess, from Channel 4 News in the city of Milwaukee, and an article that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just recently, talking about, you know, and questioning the information that, you know, you and others are bringing to the table. You want to say what?
Oh, good morning, Earl and Dr. Yan and Paul. And Earl, I'm really excited if I haven't said this before, but I'm very excited about the plans of this program in the future, and I can't wait for the announcement of this because it's going to be very important information and consistent information that people can gravitate to and know where to go get it if they want to learn the facts, the truth, and a lot of the insights that are being left out into the public by the media. But yes, I wanted to.
So Robert, hold on. Before you go into that, let me just read this paragraph. On December 16, 1974, President Gerald Ford signed into law the Safe Drinking Water Act. 50 years later, it remains one of America's most important environmental laws and most effective public health regulations. It's largely responsible for the U.S. ranking among the countries with the safest drinking water year after year. It's also why, with a few notable exceptions, Americans in most communities across the country can confidently pour straight from the tap with little concern from what might be in their water supply. Again, this is, you know, then President Gerald Ford, he signed this into law in 1974. You want to say what, Robert?
Yeah, and then 12 years later, they banned the lead pipes from being used in our water distribution center system. And then a few years later, they realized, oops, tap water isn't as fresh and clean as we thought, and we need to establish some kind of guidelines or rules, and that's when they created the lead copper rule in 1991. Slowly but surely, they have been realizing that the effort to provide lead-free water in our water system is not being achieved, and has been going on for 100 or more years in this country, especially after they started laying those lead pipes. But, you know, recently, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published an article by Dr. Manuel Teodoro, and it was an opinion piece that he put together. And he says in the opinion piece titled was, "As Water Pipes Crumble, So Does Our Trust in Government, and Here's How We Fix It." And so, you know, the title was enticing. The title of the opinion piece was like spot on. It sounds like, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about. We've been talking about this here in Milwaukee since we started this movement to remove lead pipes 10 years ago. But when I read the opinion piece, I started realizing and seeing that a lot of what the good professor there was writing mimicked or reflected and mirrored a lot of what one of the national groups out there, the American Water Works Association, has been saying for many, many years in their efforts to make it look like they're doing something about this issue, but really diluting and dismissing the issue in one way or another. And what I wanted to do was to basically highlight a couple of points on that op-ed, because I think it's important for people to understand that this opinion piece, when you look at it, the individual who wrote it is the deputy editor of the American Water Works Association. And I found it odd that in his bio in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article that he wrote did not reflect that he was a member of the AWWA. And so I thought, okay, well, obviously he's got something to hide here. Don't want people to know who his affiliation or his allegiances are to. So let me take a look at this piece. And there were a few points on this piece that, you know, when you read it on the face of it, sounds very good. Sounds like this guy knows what he's talking about. But when you look behind the scenes and you read between the lines, you really start realizing if you really have an analytical mind and understand these issues and understand the alliances and understand the partnerships that are going on here, you see that a lot of what's being said, while though publicly may look like it's the right thing and it's the right thing to say, they're really just basically creating a lot of sophistry and obfuscation on this issue. And one of the points that he makes was in his article when he talks about communities around America can confidently pull straight from the tap with little concern of what might be in their water supply, which is completely and totally absolutely untrue. The bottom line is that lead is in the water everywhere. And basically what he's doing is just basically writing and covering for the water utilities around the country. Lead in water is everywhere, and not just in communities that were just recently reported on. It's in the rural areas. It's everywhere. So that's a point that needs to be addressed, and he needs to have his facts checked on that, because nowhere in America are you going to be, especially when it comes to lead and water, finding lead-free water. Even if it's two or one part per billion, there's lead in water, and the CDC and all health agencies and major credible health agencies all say zero is where we need to be when it comes to lead and water.
Dr. LeBrun, go ahead, Robert, go ahead.
I'm going to go at, there's a couple of points, but I'm going to go two at a time, and then I'll let my colleagues chime in if they want to. What this other point is, they're talking about in his article or his opinion piece, he says, you know, we need to highlight and increase awareness of these 9+ million lead service lines that are still being used across the country. And on the face of it, again, this sounds good. This is true. This is very absolutely true. But again, lead pipes are not the only source of material that it's are putting the lead in the water. Lead is coming from everywhere. And so the water systems need to be cleaned out. And basically what the AWWA messaging or his messaging, I don't know whose messaging he's putting out here, but I know it's not the messaging of the grassroots and of the people in the community who have been fighting this. I know that this is not correct. And the strategy that they're, that he's employing here is basically saying, yeah, we're going to focus on the lead pipes as a way to protect the water utilities from not having to address this issue in a more broader way. And again, it's not just the lead pipes that are poisoning and tainting our waters. The lead is everywhere, and that has to be addressed.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday at 8 o'clock. So that means we're joined by Dr. Yana Lombrini-Du, co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and Paul Schwartz, another co-founder for Campaign for Lead-Free Water, Robert Miranda, and you. You should pay close attention to the discussion that is going to continue here on the Earl Ingram Show. Yeah, your health really matters when we're talking about, you know, the elixir of life, and that's water. 855-752-4842. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Your heart be light. From now on, your troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Wednesday, so that means we're joined by the good doing Dr. Yana Lombrini-Du, She's with a co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and also Paul Swartz, who's also a co-founder, and along with Robert Miranda Flack. And so, Robert, you know, there was something else I think you wanted to get across before we brought in your colleagues.
No, there's a couple of more points I want to bring in, but I thought
okay.
Dr. Jan and Paul can chime in on those and maybe even correct me if I'm wrong.
All right, so Jan, before you respond to what Robert is saying, I think it's important that people understand that in Wisconsin alone, there are 570 different water utilities just in Wisconsin. And when they're talking about the cost of repairing all of this across the nation is $625 billion is what they project. So it's not hard to imagine why they would not want the truth to come out and just how big an operation this is. You say what?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think that this is a very important discussion that we need to be having as a nation. Certainly it's a costly endeavor to fix our water utilities and our water, drinking water infrastructure, and ensure that our water is clean and safe for human consumption. At the same time, this is also a matter of priorities. You know, where are we putting our money into? And why is drinking water in the 21st century in the United States of America, a threat to human health, and so, you know, these are questions that we need to be having as a society. I think by leaving the questions up to the water utility industry and the Environmental Protection Agency. We really are missing the opportunity to have affected communities weigh in on our financial and fiscal priorities on the federal and state and local levels. And that's a very big problem.
So Paul, you read the article that Robert read. You want to respond?
Yeah, Earl, I think a little bit of context is really helpful for the op-ed that we're referring to that Dr. Teodoro wrote. The Water Utility Association, the American Water Works Association, was founded in 1881, fully 143 years ago, at the University of Washington in St. Louis. And one of the first committees they put together was on the problem of lead in water toxicity. So this is not a new issue to this association, which represents over 4,000 water utilities, including that in Milwaukee, Washington, D.C., New York, Flint, Los Angeles, many places all over the country and many different sizes and all over Wisconsin as well. And the thing about the American Water Works Association is that by the time they were founded, lead in water was expanding as a material used both in the service lines or laterals. Over 70% of the biggest cities in the United States, the top cities over 30,000 at the time, used lead for their service lines. And the Lead Industry Association, the same people who brought you lead in paint and lead in gasoline, was sending people out around the country to change building codes to work to require lead to be used as a preferred plumbing material and doing what we call workforce development to train plumbers and pipe fitters to install this. So it's been a big issue for a long time. And the science, even back in the late 19th century and early 20th century, was really clear about the problems of lead in water for public health. And so the question is, why hasn't the AWWA been more at the forefront of fixing this problem? Instead, what we've seen is a consistent pushback on the original lead and copper rule back in 1991. Successive revisions to the lead and copper rule, including this latest one, the lead and copper rule improvements, which was just finalized this year on October 16th. AWWA, as my colleague Yana Lambrini Du said, has brought a suit against EPA and the lead and copper rule. And so this is the context for this op-ed that Dr. Teodoro wrote, which acknowledges lead pipe, but doesn't acknowledge the much broader problem of lead coming at being dispensed out of almost every tap, whether you have lead pipe or not, whether your home is old or not, whether you're in an urban or rural area. So this is a really important manufacturing of ignorance, and it's part of the official intransigence of the water industrial complex.
All right, it's Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Campaign for Lead-Free Water and FLAC. You should continue, call somebody and have them listen to the conversations that are being had, because, there can't be any better place to be on any Wednesday morning than right here getting this life-saving information on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday, so that means Robert Miranda of FLAC, Dr. Yana Lambrini Du, and Paul Swartz, co-founders of Campaign for Lead-Free Water. Robert, let me read this quickly, and then you have at it. Here's how we provide clean drinking water for the next 50 years against 50 leading water professionals and scholars came together in Madison earlier this month to envision the next 50 years of the Safe Drinking Water Act. At that symposium, colleagues at the Water and Health Advisory Council, and I formerly, the guy who wrote this article, unveiled our vision for the future of drinking water in America. If we lay out principles to ensure public health, rebuild trust, and provide sustainable drinking water. Robert, do you buy into any of that?
Paul gave us a very good backdrop on the American Water Works Association. And let's all remember that this op-ed was written by the AWWA Water Science Deputy Editor. And, that portion of the article that you read really is an insult to our intelligence. These organizations, especially the AWWA, have been around for over 140 years. And basically what he's saying is the people who have been around all these years, who have created this problem, and have since 1991, after the LCR was first created, pushed back on the LCR, are going to be the people who are going to fix it. And now they're suing the EPA because communities around the country got together to make the changes on the LCR that need to be made. And here, this op-ed writer, who is part of that organization that is suing the EPA because this change goes too far, smacks of hypocrisy, and once again points out that this guy's allegiance is not to us. I mean, in that same gathering that he talks about justice regulations, and he talks about we must eliminate racial and ethnic socioeconomic disparities in tap water access. I mean, these are all very good sounding. This is very good sounding language. But the bottom line is, in that little meeting that he had with his 50 colleagues, where they put together the vision for the next 50 years of how we're going to live under the Safe Water Act, you could bet in that room that no one from the affected communities or activists were part of that discussion. This is a discussion being led by people in the ivory tower who basically are telling us we know better than you what we would like to see done on this issue.
So Robert, Dr. Yana wants to respond. Dr. Yana?
Yeah, I think that what Robert is saying is just so critical, because we are conditioned as a society to believe that the solutions to our problems are going to come from the scholarly class and also, of course, our government, and in this case, our water utility industry. And when it comes to the history of lead in drinking water, what one sees again and again is that if it hadn't been for affected and poisoned communities standing up and saying that we demand that this problem is addressed, we demand that our babies and our children are protected, we demand real scientific solutions, that we would still be in the dark ages when it comes to our understanding of how prevalent lead in drinking water is and what it does to the human body. When I started my engagement in this issue, the national mantra about lead in drinking water that was supported, that it was generated by the CDC, it was amplified by EPA and government agencies all across the country, was that lead in water is a minor or secondary source of exposure, not very important. And in fact, if you are exposed to it, probably when you go to the bathroom, you just pee it out. No big deal. That was the mantra about 20 or so years ago. And it was because of activists on the ground who knew that this was absolutely could not be true, because the science already from the 1960s was showing that lead in drinking water can have a significant impact on children's blood lead levels and of fetal health. It was because of people on the ground that we've managed to turn around the national narrative to a great degree, not completely, and have our federal government now funding some portion of lead service line replacements across the country. So for any academic institution that claims to be trying to envision justice-centered water delivery in this country for the next 50 years, to be excluding the very communities that have been at the driver's seat, people risking their families, their careers, their reputations, and fighting for clean water, are routinely excluded from academic scholars who parachute into the subject when they see that there's opportunities for them there. That's a real problem. And that's not going to get us to clean water in the next 50 years.
If you're just joining us, every Wednesday at 8 o'clock, I am joined by Paul Swartz, Dr. Yana Lambrini-Du, Robert Miranda, as they talk about lead-free water. And I will say to you, Dr. Yana, as we and Robert, as we await Paul's return, you know, Dr. Yana, I was at an event this past Saturday, and I was talking with a state senator of Wisconsin, and she said precisely to me what you just echoed. When I talked about lead water, she talked about lead in the soil. She talked about lead paint. She talked about something else, but she made water the fourth on that link. So that fight still goes on.
That fight is absolutely still going on. We have an ongoing, very active, alive narrative that is coming from our professional classes, our medical community, public health community, childhood lead poisoning community, that is still invested in promoting a false narrative about lead paint, soil, and dust being always the primary source of exposure, and lead in drinking water being always a minor or secondary source. I'm simplifying it a little bit, but not very much. And so the science is very clear, and common sense is very clear, that depending on any individual person's environment, there's going to be different sources of lead that will be dominant in contributing to each single person's exposures. So a child might be in a space that has a lot of loose, flaky lead paint, and a child might be eating that paint, but another child might be in a space that doesn't have lead paint, soil, and dust, and is drinking lead-contaminated water. One thing that everybody needs to know is that even though not every home has lead-based paint or lead in soil, every home has lead-bearing plumbing in it. And even though nobody needs to be eating paint to stay alive, or dust or soil, everybody needs to be drinking water and to be cooking with water to stay alive. And these types of distinctions are rarely, if ever, highlighted by the master narrative that we're being fed by our government, our academia, and other professional communities.
So, Paul, we lost you for a moment, and I was saying to Dr. Yana and Robert is that I was at an event this past Saturday, and a state senator was saying to me that lead in the water is like fourth on the rung. She talked about, you know, lead paint. She talked about lead in the soil. She talked about something else, but she certainly made it clear that their focus is that lead water is the fourth one that they're the most concerned about, and I guess not as critically important as the others. You say what?
Well, I think that the belief by elected officials and lots of bureaucrats, in local and state, and sometimes even at the federal health agencies that oversee what toxins people are exposed to, is not based in science, and a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on both outside buildings in our homes with lead and water, and inside the buildings with lead and water. And at the center of this is a misunderstanding about when the few blood lead tests we do, what they reveal or don't reveal, both about the general population, their exposure to lead, but also around drinking water. And we need a whole show to talk about this problem. But I think the problem is that we have when a blood lead test is taken, the way the program is designed is with the idea that the exposure comes from kids who are doing hand-to-mouth ingestion of lead from paint and dust and soil. And while that's true, that that's an important exposure route, to just test kids at one or at two or at three, four, five, as is now being done in some places, while good, misses especially the lead that pregnant moms are ingesting that are getting passed along to the fetuses, and the water that's being used several times to mix with formula or for cooking the mac and cheese, or that kids are drinking even before they're crawling and doing this hand-to-mouth type of thing. And so we have by design created a situation where we're missing the exposures that are happening to lead and water. And the last thing that I'll say is that lead and water only has a 30-day half-life in the blood. And so if you're not catching an exposure within that roughly 30 days, when you do a blood test, even at one and two, you might heavily understate the amount of lead that's available in the blood or miss it altogether. And this is fundamental to that narrative that you were fed, Earl, that lead and water is not an important source. And in many cases, as Dr. Lambrini-Du said, lead and water can be the sole source or primary source, especially in those homes that have no paint, soil, and dust with lead in them.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Wednesday. That means we are joined by, again, the Campaign for Lead-Free Water and FLAC, and we're going to continue to inform you about these critically important information for you and your family. We'll delve even deeper on the Earl Ingram Show.
Every year, every Christmas, I return. Every year, every Christmas, I come here. Every year.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. We are joined by Dr. Yana Lambrini-Du, Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and Paul Swartz, co-founders of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and one and only Robert Miranda from FLAC. Let me take a phone call quickly. Go ahead, CJ. You have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Earl. We all want clean water. I guess my question is, these old homes, I own one that was built in the early 1900s, and they did replace the water lateral to the house. But I'm curious if you could give me an idea what it would cost to replace the pipes in the house, because is the issue now. It's great. It costs a lot of money. These businesses are making a lot of money installing these laterals, and that's fine. But the homeowner is going to have to pay thousands of dollars, I'm assuming, to have the lead pipes replaced in old homes. So I'm just curious if you do have an idea what it would cost.
It's a great question, CJ. Thank you very much for the call. Any of you can respond to that.
Um,
Earl, we had that discussion in several committees at City Hall, how we're going to address lead pipes that are inside the home that the property owners have. And that discussion was based on what took place in Madison. Madison, Wisconsin removed thousands of their lead pipes, but were still finding lead in the water. And they realized that they did not have a plan to remove the lead pipes in the houses. And so they had to revisit that whole campaign. And in Milwaukee, there were discussions on how can we set incentives for homeowners and property owners to proceed with removing these lead pipes from their house. And a number of ideas came up, and I think that some of these ideas have been implemented. You know, tax abatements, doing something in regards to creating grants to support and help property owners. That discussion, I believe, is still ongoing. But again, common council members of Milwaukee have to push that so that we haven't just spent millions and millions of dollars removing lead laterals to get rid of lead and water, only to find out that we still have lead and water. We have to find initiatives. We have to come up with ideas to support property owners in their quest to remove these lead pipes within their homes. That's very important. If we don't do something about that, then all of this will be a failed. The price and doing that can vary. You know, they can range from small houses to large houses, from 4,000 to almost 16,000, even more. But again, it's a very financially complex issue for property owners, but government and can find incentives and ways to support property owners to help them manage this financial burden.
Let's try to squeeze, Robert, let's try to squeeze Richard from Waukesha in real quick. Go ahead, Richard.
You're talking about pipes. To put it real basically, certain pipes have only an age length, and the lowest priced pipe is about 20 years. So there's other problems with the pipes. Galvanized pipe is about 20 years, and that's the lower priced pipe. And so you have to figure out, you know, the cost of the pipes for the building, and that can change according to size, like you're talking about. And then also, when you replace pipes, it's like anything else. You can replace them and have the place look nice, or you can replace them just because you want them replaced. You'll also have an issue with who owns the house. Is it a rental?
Hey, Richard, I wish we had more time. Richard obviously is a plumber. Robert, Dr. Yana Labrini-Du and Paul Schwartz, I want to say to the audience that hopefully by next year, early next year, we will be able to then announce to you guys our plan to bring this to you in a format, you know, different than the one you are receiving it now. They are working feverishly to bring this and bring this together where you'll be able to, you know, have this, we'll be able to have this dialogue uninterrupted and constant, so you can, you know, not just wait for Wednesday, but we'll be able to bring this to you, you know, more regularly on the Earling Show. Thank you, guys. I think we won't see each other before Christmas, so Merry Christmas, and we'll see you guys after Christmas. Thank you. Up next, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
Said I don't feel so bad.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.